Welcome to the Wall Street Journal's Small Business Report. I'm Gordon Deal. Today's stories include new business ideas, the new trend on the job scene, and the surprising percentage of small businesses not using social media effectively. Those stories and more after this.
Don't just read the Wall Street Journal, experience it with podcasts from the Wall Street Journal online. Headlines, technology, personal finance, small business tips, featured stories from journal reporters and more. For a complete list of podcasts, log on to wsj.com/podcasts or check us out on your smartphone with Stitcher or TuneIn.
We'll begin with this. There are endless new business ideas. Here's the Wall Street Journal's Joe Connolly.
Here are just some recent new business ideas. ShareSwell makes it easy to give stocks as a wedding gift after the founder of the new business didn't want to give any of the items left on a friend's wedding registry. SeatGeek sells tickets, but rather than ranking them by price, they rank them by best value based on event, venue, even day of week. Breather rents living room like conference rooms in commercial buildings so you don't have to meet in a Starbucks or a shared office site. Try the World sends gourmet food from a different country every month with cultural tips and a list of movies and literature from that country. Columbia University is starting to actually fund some of its graduates' business startups at a shared work site. One of the ones being funded is Qualler, which says mobile commerce is terrible. We're a personal shopper that keeps your wallet in mind. Rather than cramming everything onto a small screen, we show one product at a time, swipe right if you like it, we'll let you know when it goes on sale. Other new businesses are Bee Organic Snacks for Kids, Bundle Organic Juices for New Moms, Tiny Updates for parents to control what their kids share online, Side Projects, dancing video games, Motobound to create a niche market for college students to buy and sell clothing among themselves, and Ninth Dot, to pay customers for good ideas that they send to companies, but that big companies probably never even see. I'm Joe Connolly for the Wall Street Journal.
Thanks, Joe. Have you heard the term microjobbing? Latest trend on the employment scene, apparently. Some pluses and minuses from Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. Rick, how do you define a microjob?
It's a job you do a few hours a week, or really as many hours a week as you want. Typically, you are not working for a company full-time. Think of an Uber driver. Uber is the new car service. There are others. Lyft is another one, sidecar. The way this works is you sign up to be an Uber driver, and basically you just you sort of clock in whenever you want. And you sign up with the company. You have your account on your smartphone, and you sort of sign in, and you say, I'm ready to work. And if there's a paying job, you do it. There are many more jobs like this. And what's really, I mean, there's nothing new about people who do freelance work or people who do odd jobs, but what is new here is there are a lot of new websites and other types of online services that are sort of the matchmaker. So TaskRabbit is one, for instance. You sign up and say, I'm willing to do this type of work, and people who need something done, maybe it's just something around the house, maybe they need you to run errands, they look you up and they find you when they need you. So it's sort of work for hire for a while, if you will.
So in essentially, you might be cobbling together a 40-hour work week in different ways.
Yeah, that's right. And I've interviewed a lot of people who are doing this. It might sound, you know, pretty complicated and difficult to keep all these things lined up, but for people who seem to be pretty good at time management, they like it because it gives them a lot of flexibility. They can work when they want. You know, this helps with working parents, for instance. Maybe you're the second earner in a family. You want to make some income, but you don't want to be committed to a full-time job. So the idea that you can work when you want and sort of schedule jobs around your family needs or whatever other needs you might have is appealing to somebody. Now, this is not a panacea for a very weak job market because, of course, these tend to be jobs that have no benefit and they're not necessarily high-paying jobs, but they're allowing people to sort of fill in the gaps during downtime, if you will.
We're speaking with Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman about micro jobs and how they can help you ditch your boss. All right, so explain a little bit more, I guess, about maybe benefits and potential drawbacks.
Well, the benefits are you work for companies you want to work for. And let's say, I mean, I talked to some people who do computer work, for instance. There's a lot of demand for that type of work. So it's not, that's actually one area where it's not hard to find jobs. But you might do one project for a company and you decide you don't like the way they operate. Or maybe they say they want you to do one job for a fixed price, but they keep trying to stretch the project and get more and more out of you without paying you more. That does happen. So you might say, you know, I've had enough of this. And, you know, without the trauma of having to quit a full-time job and start a new job, you can just, you know, find somebody else to freelance for. So the flexibility is what comes up over and over as a benefit of these types of things. On the downside, this errand site called TaskRabbit has people who will do jobs that are not necessarily high-paying jobs or high-skilled jobs, and yet the vast majority of the people who've signed up to do this have a college degree, and some even have master's degrees and doctorate. So it's hard to imagine you're getting a good return on your education dollar if what you're doing for money is running errands around town for other people who might have better paying jobs.
How popular is this overall, would you say?
Well, these services are going gangbusters, and there are economists who think that we're only at the beginning of this idea of micro jobs. You know, another thing that's happening, Gordon, is I think companies are, maybe 10 years ago, companies, they had this mentality. They wanted everybody to be on staff. They wanted to control everybody. Of course, it's different now. We've been through tons of cost cutting on account of the recession and a weak economy. And companies just seem more accustomed to farming out work to people they don't necessarily have a lot of control over.
Thanks, Rick. Yahoo Finance columnist Rick Newman. Coming up next, small businesses and their use of social media today.
By 2025, it's estimated that half the world's population will lack access to safe drinking water. A sorry state of affairs as two-thirds of our planet is covered by water. We are helping develop solutions for salt water to satisfy the thirst of future generations. BASF, the chemical company.
Whether you're thinking of starting a small business or already own one, communicating with your customers, as you probably know, is typically priority number one for success. One of the popular ways to do that these days is through social media. So why are so many business owners going silent? A new survey by Deluxe Corporation found a high percentage of small businesses not using sites like Twitter to their advantage. Tim Carroll is Vice President of Small Business Engagement at Deluxe. Tim, give us some of the results.
We asked small business owners how they're spending their time engaging customers online and really how much time are they investing in their online presence. We found that 73% of small business owners said word of mouth was the most important tool they had for finding new customers. Yet at the same time, less than a third of them are spending more than an hour a week updating their online presence, their website, their social media, their email marketing. So we thought that was a bit of a disconnect that surprised us in the survey.
How much time should they spend, Tim, updating their websites and using social media?
Yeah, when we talked to the people who claimed to be most successful, they were spending 10 to 15 hours a week, really making sure all the parts of their online presence were connected. So their websites were connected to their social media, and they had a consistent presence across LinkedIn and their email marketing. So the folks doing a more integrated online presence were more in that 10 to 15 hours a week range versus the majority that were under the hour mark.
Why do you think small business owners aren't doing this more?
Small business owners know they need to be online. I think often it's they either feel that they don't have the technical expertise, they don't have the time, or they don't have the interest in doing it themselves. So we try to make sure that for the folks that want to do it themselves, they have that education, the tools to do that affordably and easily. But for the folks that, you know, really want a helping hand, they get into business not to be a social media pro or a digital media pro. They get into business to run their day-to-day business. A lot of them are sometimes better off finding a partner to do that with.
We're speaking with Tim Carroll at Deluxe Corporation. Where should these businesses be online? Is there a specific place, or should they take a broad media approach?
We advise our small business partners to really talk to their customers and look at their competitors. If your customers are telling you that they're spending a lot of time on Facebook, then the people who look like them and interested in your business are likely to also be on Facebook. So we say, you know, kind of fish where the fish are. If you're finding good customers coming in who spend a lot of time on Pinterest, then that's where you ought to be versus trying to be gunshot and guessing at where your time's best spent.
One of the things you talk about is changing things online so it's not static. Do you have an optimal timeline for things to be changed?
I think it depends on what kind of business you're in. We kind of advise you take a fresh look at your site. And if you're a restaurant and it's Cinco de Mayo and you still get your St. Patrick's Day recipe up or menu up, you've got a disconnect there. I think some sites that your business line is not changing, you know, weekly or monthly, can stay in one place for a while. But if you've got a business in realty or in food or in a more dynamic, fast-changing market, you should be updating the site at least once a week and your social media three or four times a week.
Thanks, Tim. Tim Carroll, Vice President of Small Business Engagement at Deluxe Corporation. If you want more on small business topics, trends, and startup ideas, check out WSJ.com and click the Small Business tab. You can also get small business tips by following me on Twitter with the handle @GordonDeal. I'm Gordon Deal for The Wall Street Journal.